This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Part of the debate over gay marriage focuses not on the courtroom or the bedroom, but on the nursery. Of course, many homosexuals and lesbians have and are already raising children, and that's not going to change no matter what happens. But the rights of the parents and the legitimacy of the families are being questioned as never before. So what do we know about gay parenting? How many are there with how many kids? How does being raised by gay or lesbian couples affect children's health, their education, how well they do in school and in life? We'll talk with a demographer, with experts who've analyzed the available research, and we want to hear from you. If you're a child raised by gay parents or a gay parent yourself, or if you know somebody being raised in a gay household, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us now to give us an idea about who and where these children and families are is Gary Gates, a demographer for the Urban Institute here in Washington. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you very much.
So how big is this? How many kids are growing up with gay or lesbian parents?
Well, actually, that's a difficult question. What I can tell you from one of the ways we can count that is using census data. And in the census, we're able to count how many kids are being raised by same-sex couples. And that figure is roughly about 250,000 in the United States. The bigger question is how many kids are being raised by gay parents, regardless of whether they're coupled or not. And the best estimates, and to be honest, they're not from necessarily great sources, they are just estimates, are at least several million.
So the most reliable numbers that we have, though, are on same-sex couples.
Right. And as I said, and at the very least in census, we know there's 250,000 kids with parents who are of the same sex.
Are more gay couples having children now than before?
It certainly appears so. In the census, it's about 1 in 4 of the same-sex couples have children. And that's actually quite a bit higher than many people thought. And while you can't make great comparisons between similar information from the 1990 census, it's certainly quite a bit higher.
How does this break out in terms of gay men couples and lesbian couples?
It's more common amongst the female couples. It's roughly 1 in 3 female couples have children and about 1 in 5 of the male couples.
And is there any way to know how many of these children are adopted and how many of them are with one of their biological parents?
It's not a simple thing to determine, but it is true that, in part because of the way the data is collected in the census, but the adopted children in these households, or the children that the people identify as adopted, it looks like gay couples are about twice as likely as their heterosexual counterparts to have adopted children. But that fraction is still very small, like around 5%.
So the others would be?
The vast majority of children are identified as natural born.
So they would be the children of a...
probably of a previous marriage, but again, you know, that's not completely clear.
Okay. Are these kids living with parents who share custody?
Again, that's a difficult question to answer from the census. Because we don't necessarily know those questions aren't asked in the census. What we can say is that 2/3 of them live in states where there's not a guarantee of what we call a second parent adoption. So where one, if it is a child who potentially could be adopted by the other parent, 2/3 of the kids live in places where that's not something that the state necessarily does for all same-sex couples.
And are these, let me ask a variation on that question. Are children with gay parents more likely to live in areas with high-profile gay communities such as San Francisco?
Actually, no. They're more likely to live where other people have children. So it looks like in the census data that, you know, if your choice is the simple way to explain that, if you're a gay couple with children and you have the choice of going somewhere with lots of gay people or lots of children and the amenities that go with that, good schools, safer neighborhoods, it appears as if gay couples are more likely to pick the places that are more child-friendly.
How do you tell that?
When you look at the concentration of the couples in the census, for instance, the places where gay couples are the most likely to have children are, for instance, throughout the South, which are not the areas that are most likely to have gay people living in them. So again, it appears as if a gay in places where there are more children or more couples with children or more families with children, the gay population tends to have more children as well.
Okay. As you looked at these statistics, what surprised you?
Well, I think the number of couples with children, I think, was surprising. The fact that they live in 96% of all counties in the United States. So for someone to say there aren't any gay people with kids in my area, census suggests that not a lot of people can say that.
Mm-hmm. And as you look at these numbers, obviously one of the first things that the researchers tend to say is, you know, we need more research. This seems to be one of those areas.
Right. And you know, census does great at this notion of counting and of exploring things. But what it can't tell you are a lot of the questions that people are asking, like, you know, how well are these kids doing? What do they, you know, what are their problems? Are they similar to kids in married households? Those are questions that are more difficult to answer.
And the questions we are going to proceed on to right now, as if you knew our minds, Gary. Gary Gates, thanks very much for being with us.
You're
today.
Very welcome.
Gary Gates is a demographer for the Urban Institute in Washington, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. Once we get past the numbers, the next obvious question is about the well-being of children with gay parents. There is a body of research that examines that, and joining us now to speak about it is Dr. Ellen Perrin. She's a professor of pediatrics at the Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts New England Medical Center. She's the author of Sexual Orientation in Child and Adolescent Healthcare and has also served as an advisor to the American Academy of Pediatrics on these issues. And Ellen, good to have you on the program.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So what is the research that has been done into I guess the phrase we would use, well-adjusted the children of gay parents are?
Well, there's actually been quite a lot of research done. The research suffers from the problem that's already been referred to, that it's difficult to identify these children and families and enroll them into research studies, but we've been getting better and better at that. The original studies way back in 1980 to 1995, in that period, were done pretty much with volunteer samples of children who were living with one or another parent after a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent to that, when it was more and more common for gay couples to identify themselves as a same-sex couple prior to there being any children, and then the children being born or adopted into that family. From about 1995 to really to now, there have been a lot of studies done of those children, comparing them to children brought up in a heterosexual family. And then there's kind of a third wave of studies, which has looked at all children with any kind of parents who were born after IVF or any other kind of reproductive technology, surrogate mothering and so forth. So again, being able to compare children who were born to a heterosexual couple or to single men or women or to using a surrogate or alternative insemination techniques or to a same-sex couple. So there have been really three kind of waves of research in this area.
And I'm sure we'll get to them all, but in general, what do they conclude?
Well, the interesting and encouraging thing is that they all really conclude the same thing, so it's fairly easy to describe that. None of them found any significant differences among these children in their self-esteem, in their peer relationships, or their kind of social adjustment, or in any kind of emotional symptoms or psychological or psychiatric disorders. The data are really incredibly consistent, much more consistent than I'm used to in pediatrics.
Does that make you suspicious?
No.
It's
I think it's encouraging because there's really no reason to think that these children would be worse off or different in any problematic way. You know, the research really just confirms that hunch.
Who gets interviewed for these studies? Is it the kids or the parents or who?
Well, both. Both, actually. Most of these studies do include some kind of, not necessarily an interview, but maybe some kind of psychological testing with the children. And most of them also look at parents, both in parents reporting about their children, but also the parents reporting about their own attitudes towards parenting, their own parenting practices, and so forth. And in most of the good studies, there also is another observer, a teacher or a daycare center provider or some other person who's obviously a little bit more objective.
And are these sort of snapshot studies, or are they what call researchers call longitudinal studies, where people are studied over a long period of time?
Right. Well, that's an excellent question and a big problem, because in fact, most of them are cross-sectional studies. However, which means just that they were snapshots in time. However, there are now a couple of longitudinal studies which are ongoing. There's one study in which the children are now young adults. They're no longer children, they're really adults, but they were children whose parents were lesbian. And that's the only study that started way back in the 80s and was longitudinal. However, we have the potential of finding out a lot more over the next decade or so, because there now are a few large longitudinal studies that will really show us progression over time.
Up till now, I mean, you say that the research has come to pretty much the same conclusion, but as you know, some people have looked at it and challenged it in various ways. How reliable do you regard this research as being?
Well, each individual study, as is true for most individual studies, each individual study is certainly can't stand up on its own, because, again, these studies were done usually with volunteer samples and usually with relatively small samples, especially the ones that were done quite a long time ago. But the reason that I'm actually quite confident in the research is that over and over and over and over again, we've found the same information. We now have data on 600 or 700 children who were either raised by a gay or a lesbian parent after divorce, or who were born or adopted into a gay or lesbian couple family. And again, over and over and again, the data are kind of monotonous in showing no reason to worry about these kinds of family structures for children.
Our phone number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, or email us, TOTN@npr.org. And we'll begin with Jennifer, who's on the line with us from Layton in Utah.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just calling to tell you guys, or whoever's listening, that I was raised by a lesbian mother. Basically, it was hard growing up in like the mid-80s, because it wasn't accepted as it is now. I mean, you see it on the TV, you see it everywhere, where back then it was really taboo. And, you know, having any close friends and wondering why you have, you know, two women in the same room, things like that, it was very difficult to try to explain that, you know, oh, well, they're roommates, or, you know, and that was basically the hardest thing growing up, is, you know, not thinking that you'd be accepted with a mother that was a lesbian.
Mm-hmm. And what was one of your biological mother was one of the couple?
Yes, she. Well, my mom was basically in several relationships. I would say maybe five during my whole period of growing up. So I don't think I had more than like 6 or 7 years, you know, with my mother. So that was also hard, where, you know, it was basically my mom, you know, and I would have, you know, somebody live with us, or we would live with them. And, you know, they would buy things together. They would, you know, split things with money. And then, you know, if the relationship didn't work out, then, you know, well, this is in my name, so you can't have it, you know. You know, and that was really difficult without having, you know, any kind of, like, legal, you know, unless you wanted to get some sort of prenuptial or whatever, that I don't even think would exist with that kind of relationship.
And Jennifer, just briefly, because we're running out of time in this segment, as you've gotten older, this has become less of a problem, and you think things are worked out fine for you?
Yeah, I'm a mother of three. I've been married for almost 10 years, and I, you know, I love my mother, and I'm very proud of her and the stands that she has taken in her life, and she's raised me, and I think she's done a really good job. So,
Well, Jennifer, thanks for the call, and good luck with your children.
Okay, thank you so much.
We're talking about kids with homosexual or lesbian parents. You can join our conversation at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. Back with more after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about kids with homosexual parents. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at npr.org. Our guest, Dr. Alan Perrin of the Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts New England Medical Center. And in a few moments, we'll be joined by Maggie Gallagher of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy. And Dr. Perrin, Jennifer was telling us about the break, about growing up and how difficult it was in a lot of ways when she was, I guess, in middle school and high school. And that's a story you hear from a lot of people who question about whether, you know, the children of gays and lesbian couples can experience childhood the same way that other kids do. It's hard to explain.
Right. Well, I think what it points up is a couple of things. One is that the problem, if there is a problem with being a child in a family made up of same-sex parents, doesn't come from the child or from the family, but from the society around them.
Mm-hmm.
That the stigma that still surrounds homosexuality, even now, makes life more difficult for these families, which are otherwise quite able to nurture and care for their children. I do think that this has changed quite a bit, and I'm sure that at this point it would be easier for a child like Jennifer to grow up with her family than it was 25 or 30 years ago when she did grow up.
The other question that I guess comes out of that the question of, you know, is it more or less likely that children of gay parents will turn out to be gay themselves?
Right. Well, this question gets asked very frequently, and I guess I feel like I need to point out that even asking that question presumes that there must be something wrong with turning out to identify oneself as gay or lesbian. And that's a question that I hope is somewhat dated, since we now know that being gay or lesbian is not in itself a problem or a disability or a disorder. But nevertheless, I'm prepared to say that we don't have all of the answers on that question, but we have no indication that children who grow up with gay or lesbian parents are more likely to be gay or lesbian themselves. The only longitudinal study that exists in which the children are now young adults, and so therefore the only study that can really tell us the answer to this, would suggest that the same proportion of children, or again, young adults, identify themselves as gay or lesbian as in the comparison sample in which the children were raised in a heterosexual family. Also, in younger children, there is no evidence that there's any difference in the play or playmate preferences of those children compared to children who were brought up by a heterosexual couple. So there's really no reason to be thinking that these children are more likely to be gay or lesbian, but we don't know the answer because we don't really have the data yet.
Okay, let's get another caller on the line. And Rachel is with us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, I'm actually sitting here with my children. I'm a lesbian parent. I have two daughters, one's 9 and 11, and we were talking about, here, listening to the radio, talking about what it's like for them to grow up being children of lesbian parents, and they know that they're very loved and feel very well adjusted, but they still feel the stigma in school. In fact, my youngest daughter just told me that she was hearing in school just recently that people were saying that gay people were stupid and that they didn't understand it. And it sounds like to me, even though maybe there's not the same kind of discrimination that there was 25 years ago with the previous caller, Jennifer, it's still very much alive, and particularly in the Southeast. A lot of discrimination going on, and I would hope that there would just be more education, making people understand that no one's really any different, and the kids are loved and brought up in a really good way.
Hmm. How old are your children, Rachel?
Leah is 9, and Becca is 11 and a half.
So is this, as I suspected, a middle school phenomenon, do you think?
No, actually, Leah is in third grade, and she was the one who was telling me this.
Hmm. All right, Rachel, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Joining us now is Maggie Gallagher, president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy, co-author of the book The Case for Marriage. She recently testified before the Senate on the issue of a marriage amendment to the Constitution. And Maggie Gallagher, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks.
In your testimony before the Senate, you spoke about how the traditional heterosexual marriage model protects and benefits children. The best interests of the child is what you're talking about, I think. Isn't that right?
Well, I don't really use the phrase traditional heterosexual, but I do think that there's something important. You know, I've spent the last 10, 15 years working on the problem a family breakdown of high rates of divorce and unmarried childbearing. And what's helped and what has made a difference in the public square is pointing out that children need mothers and fathers, and marriage is important because it gives children their own mother and father. And I think that we are embarking on what is really a, as in some ways Dr. Perrin would concede, we don't have very solid social science evidence on this. This is a social experiment on an entirely new family form. And we're not just talking about letting people do this. We're talking about changing our most basic social institution for protecting children so that it now says it doesn't matter whether you have a mother or a father. Two men or two women raising children are just the same. And I think that's troubling for quite a lot of people.
Is there any evidence or research to suggest that it is?
Well, there's an enormous amount of evidence that affirms that the intact married biological family where the mother and father are not in high conflict or violent marriage is better for children than any other family form we know of, and including other two-parent family forms where you have a cohabiting family or a remarried family or a single mother family or a single father family. Children do better when their own mother and father get and stay married and build a decent, good enough marriage. And what we don't have is any social science evidence, I think, overturning that presumption. It's a very weak and thin body of research that's been done. Almost all of it compares children of single lesbian mothers to children with single heterosexual mothers, and then concludes that orientation doesn't matter. And that may be true, but you can't compare children in two different kinds of fatherless families and conclude it just doesn't matter to children whether or not they have a father.
Well, let me bring Dr. Perrin in on this. And in the context of this email we got from Amy in Anchorage, Alaska, my husband and I are going through an open adoption and in the process filled out a form asking why we thought children need fathers. Because of it, I became curious about the need for role models from both sexes for a child. Are there any studies on this? Dr. Perrin?
Well, let me go back to a couple of the comments that Maggie Gallagher made, because I totally agree that we have a lot of evidence that children do best in a two-parent, stable, committed family. There's no question about that. What we don't know, and I think we really have no data about whether, in fact, it is the child's mother and father that are important, or whether what's important is that there be two stable, committed, conscientious, caring parents. That we know, and it's very clear that that's the best context for children. I'd also argue that it's no longer true that most of the research that's been done about children whose parents are gay or lesbian was done with single heterosexual versus lesbian mothers. That was true in the first 20 years or so of research, but over the past 10 or 15 years, there have been quite a lot of studies done that compare children born or adopted into gay or lesbian couple families. So I guess I just would question the data that Maggie Gallagher just presented. Now, I lost track of the question that you asked me, though, Neil.
Well, it was about male role models, male
oh, right.
and female role models.
Right.
Is there any? Are there any studies on that?
Well, there aren't studies on that, but it's also quite reasonable to think that children do need both male and female role models. Both boys and girls do need female and male role models. And, in fact, what has been shown in some of the research on gay and lesbian families is that they work very hard to find those kinds of role models because they don't sort of appear naturally in their families. So that it turns out that lesbian couples who have children, both boys and girls, work very hard to identify some other responsible adult males to be important role models in their families. And similarly, in reverse, gay male couples work very hard to have female role models for their children. I guess the point is their role models are really important, but they don't really have to be parents.
Mm-hmm. Maggie Gallagher, did you want to come back
sure.
on this?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I guess Dr. Perrin and I just disagree, and I don't want to plumb the social science evidence to bore your readers to death, your listeners to death. But the research on family structure shows that the family structure that's best is not with any two adults in the family, but with the intact biological married family. So far as now, of course, there are children raised well in all different family forms. It's not a death sentence not to be it, you know, not to have a mother or a father. I was an unwed mother for 10 years. You know, I think my kid's a pretty swell kid. But I do think that he missed out on a lot because his father wasn't involved in his upraising. And I think the 25 million fatherless kids that are in this country do miss something pretty important, whether or not they have other important caring adults in their life. And they miss it. They miss the lesbian self-help manuals look like the self-help manuals addressed to other single mothers. And the question comes up early, very early, where's my daddy? You know, why don't I have one? Why doesn't he love me? And I think that the world, it's nice, and I believe that lesbian mothers and gay fathers love their children and work hard to provide role models, but I don't think that any nearby guy is a father. And I think that not having, you know, the world comes in two genders, and not having this kind of intimate relationship to both genders, that to have a mother and a father is different from having a role model. And I think we're not telling the truth about children to say that it's exactly the same, whether or not children have this thing in their life.
Let's get some callers back in the conversation. Our next caller is Diane, who's with us from Granite Bay, California.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to make a comment related to the issue of gay parents raising children. I'm not gay myself, but I was married to a gay man for 10 years, and we have two daughters together. And after we divorced, and we are now, I am remarried, and he is in a very long-term relationship with a partner. And we split the care of our two daughters between the two couples. So they spend a week with me and my husband, and then they spend a week with their dad and his partner.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very involved as a couple in the raising of these children, and they're very good parents. So although we don't agree on every child-rearing decision, I would expect that that would be the case even if I was still married to him. So in our case, it seems to be working quite well. Our daughters are now 12 and 14. And seem to be, as far as I can tell, very well adjusted. I may not be objective, but I do hear this from their teachers and friends, parents, and neighbors, and that sort of thing. So I'm, for what was a situation that was extremely difficult at the time my first husband came out, and I didn't know what the outcome was going to be for any of us, I'm extremely happy and relieved several years later, about 7 years later, 8 years later, at the way things are going with us sharing the raising of our children.
I think that that's wonderful, and it's so difficult to do after divorce for so many parents for so many reasons, and I'm sure that your daughters are getting an enormous benefit from the way that you're parenting together even after your divorce. I got a letter from a guy who could have been, sounds like he could have been your ex-husband, telling me the same story, and I would like to point out that even though your marriage didn't last, it did do something pretty important for your daughters, which is that they know who their father and their mother is. And because you've been able to co-parent outside of the marriage, you know, the remarriage and the partnering has added to the number of adults rather than taking away from that. So,
yes, I think that they were only 2 and 4 at the time my first husband and I divorced, and too young to really understand what the issues were.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked to them about the fact that no matter what was happening with our marriage, I was always still the mom and he was always still the dad. And that would never change. Even if we were living in different houses and, you know, they were with only one of us at a time sometimes, that relationship with them and who their two parents were would never change.
Diane, thank you so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You know, the majority of children who have a gay or a lesbian parent in this country are, in fact, somewhat analogous to Diane's children in that the majority of these children were born in the context of a heterosexual relationship. So her experience is actually very important to this whole discussion.
That's Dr. Alan Perrin. We're also speaking with Maggie Gallagher. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to raise that exact point, whether marriage, whether a heterosexual couple who are married is the ideal, parents for a child, Maggie Gallagher, that's often not an option. They're either children of divorce or adopted.
No, the world is not ideal, and I think that it's true that most children with a gay or lesbian parent are children of divorce. These are not children of the union, which is one of the reasons why I think using this body of research on gay parenting is one thing, but using it to say there's no difference between, you know, to enter the gay marriage debate is a different matter. You know, if you can't say the ideal anymore because it's an example of bigotry, if you can't say that ideally, you know, the man and the woman who make the baby are supposed to stick around and love each other and the baby too, and that's the marriage idea because that's being, you know, being full of animus to people in alternative family forms, you're going to get fewer and fewer children in the ideal. And I think that part of the challenge is to be able to affirm what we know and or believe is best for children while at the same time having respect for everyone who's working hard to raise children.
But if you say they're different and not ideal, aren't you putting them into some form of second-class citizenship by that definition?
Well, does it matter whether this is the question? Can we say that children need mothers and fathers and that marriage is about, you know, getting men and women who make the babies into the situation that's best for them and the babies? If marriage is about something else, I don't understand why we have a bunch of laws about it. If marriage is, if we can't say that, if marriage is about that, but we can't say it because it's hate speech, then I think that, see, this is what my objection to the whole same-sex marriage debate is, that it's not about merely adding on a set of benefits for a small number of children in an alternative family form. I wish it were. It really is about changing our norms of marriage. So the one thing we need to be saying more and more powerfully to the next generation, we can't say anymore.
Dr. Perrin, we'll give you the last word.
Well, I guess it seems to me that the thing that has changed the norms of marriage the most over the past several decades has been divorce, not the opportunity for gay people to get married. The thing that hurts children considerably more and about which there is considerably more data is marital discord, domestic violence, and divorce. So in turn, if the problem here is about changing the social norms, I think we're already beyond that. The horse is already out of the barn. The issue with children who are born or adopted into gay families is really a different issue. It is that is there any reason to suspect that there is any harm that will come of to those children, or that there's any additional risk to those children compared to children born or adopted into a heterosexual family? And I believe that the data are quite clear that there's not.
Dr. Ellen Perrin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Perrin, professor of pediatrics at the Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts New England Medical Center and consultant to the AAP in writing a policy statement about adoption. She was obviously with us on the phone. Also, our thanks to Maggie Gallagher. We appreciate your time today. Maggie Gallagher is president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy, and she is co-author of the book, The Case for Marriage, and she spoke with us from her office here in Washington, D.C. When we come back from a short break, the history and politics of the militant Palestinian group Hamas. If you'd like to join that conversation, 800-989-8255 or email us, TOTN@npr.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.